We present Cider with Rosie by Laurie Lee, with Niamh Cusack as Mother and Tim McInerney as Laurie. Episode 1.
Tiles under it, Ma.
Yes, Harold, and rafters beneath that.
Marge, lift Tony down and set him in the grass alongside Lowell. Harold, Dad, help me unload the cart.
Oh, what a garden!
Marge, come back here.
Half an acre, Mother says. The grass will need cutting, though.
Here, you two, lend a hand. There'll be enough time for another once the house is in order.
And all them berries!
Doc, you be sick!
I was set down from the carrier's cart at the age of 3, and there, with a sense of bewilderment and terror, my life in the village began.
This is no time for lunch. There's a job to be done.
I keep telling him, but he won't listen.
Well, he keeps telling me, all right. Don't you know lift him, but he keeps telling.
If he was to turn it, that was my default. There, see, the lift don't get in the way now. I was trying to tell you all along.
Well, if you weren't at the other end of this table, I'd give you such a thump.
But you are, so you can't. Now, there's a shame, Harold.
Don't be making a fool of me, Jack. I'm warning you.
Harold, I am ashamed of you.
But Ma,
does the gentleman strike his younger brother?
A big, something broken.
No, he does not, Harold.
A dear Ma, broken.
Your father, for instance, or your Uncle Tom. Proper gentlemen both, just like King Edward.
I can't seem to breathe.
Why, they'd be shocked and disappointed. You girls want to pull those arms and legs off? That's because he knows no better, poor little mite. See, Tony?
No, Ma.
Oh, now he's wandered off. Go down the lake quickly. Dot, Marge, now.
Yes, Ma.
Ma. Oh. We'll fill the house with flowers, Phil. All the vases and jugs out, please. My lord, this table has not moved one inch. You two boys would have your mother carry another herself.
Ma!
My family was born into a world which saw, by chance, the end of 1,000 years of life. A world of hard work and patience, of backs bent to the ground, hands massaging the crops, of waiting on weather and growth, of villages like ships in empty landscapes, and the long walking distances between them. Of white, narrow roads rutted by hooves and cartwheels, innocent as yet of the motor car, down which people rarely passed, and almost never for pleasure, and the horse was the fastest thing moving.
Glass fishes on the mantel, please. and the framed photograph of your father. Where's that?
Somewhere.
China dogs. Bronze horses. They'll go in the window, dear, don't you think? Oh, look at that boy, Phil. Keep him away from the jugs. There's enough broken crockery as it is on this trip.
Lol! Found him.
Where have you been?
Shooting crocodiles.
He was down by the lake.
On the Nile.
There's a coot with the chicks.
Big swamps and crocodiles.
Come on, Marge.
Watch him.
Sarah.
Now, Tony, don't you go down the lake again. There's a garden up here full of lions. Hold the paper, Phyllis. Don't crumple it. That's to be safe for my curtains.
Find it. Oh, there you are, boy.
Over there in the corner.
And mind what you're doing. We don't want anything else getting broken. Of course, we ought to light a fire, I suppose. Harold?
Yes, Ma.
Suddenly, our first day was at an end. The house was furnished. Each cup and picture was nailed immovably into place. The beds were sheeted, the windows curtained, the straw mats laid, and the house was home.
The cellar's full of frogs! The bottom's on the ceiling!
See the rocks in the chimney, Ma?
And all for 3 and 6 pence a week.
I feel sick.
I've been sick!
From that day on, we grew up. The domestic arrangement of the house was shaken many times, like a snowstorm toy, so that beds and chairs and ornaments swirled from room to room, pursued by the gusty energies of Mother and the girls. But always these things resettled within the pattern of the walls. Nothing escaped or changed, and so it remained for 20 years.
And this big trap safe frog said we'd kill and see, and the pirates was waiting up there.
At 20, my father married the daughter of a local merchant, and she bore him 8 children, of whom 4 survived before dying herself still young. Then he married his housekeeper, my mother, who bore him 4 more, of which I was one. He left us when I was 3, and apart from rare and fugitive visits, he did not live with us again.
I'm to the shack with a bow today.
Oh, what?
A bow.
Charlie Revel's got a brand new suit. He had it made to fit.
He has parts of himself.
Charlie Revel. Look, Dot, I got these for 6 pence. I'm going to stitch them all around the top here, look.
Well, it's all right. Dr. Green came up to the shop this morning wearing corduroy bloomers.
Look, Ma, look, I've got a church on fire.
If X equals Y, then Y equals Z.
Look!
Shut up, Lol. If X equals Y...
Look at this here church.
Ma, tell Lloyd to shut his trap.
Shh, dear, leave your brother to do his homework.
Oh! I found a handsome snip for my animal album. An old seal. Just look, girls, look at that expression.
Oh, wait,
I said voice already.
Tandy, shut up!
No!
Shh! Oh. Hark! Hush! It's him! He spoke out again. It's him. Bolt the door, Marjorie. Blow out that candle. Hush! Keep quiet. Don't move.
The girls could hold out no longer. They stumbled their way across the firelit kitchen and clawed the dark curtains back.
Jones's goat.
two words that were almost worship. For this was not a straying animal, but a beast of ancient dream, the moonlight walker of the village roads, half captive, half rutting king. He was huge and hairy as a Shetland horse, and all men were afraid of him. Squire Jones, in fact, kept him chained to a spike driven 5 feet into the ground. Yet when nights were bright with moon or summer, neither spike nor chains could hold him.
Did you ever see a goat so big? I hear he knocked out Miss Jen. Just think of me then, coming home alone.
Whatever would you do?
I'd have a fit.
What would you do, Phil?
What about the two-headed sheep?
It talks to itself.
It seems in harmony.
They only see it when the lightning flashes.
Lives alone in Catswood larches.
So keep away from Catswood.
Well, Kerry smells a chicken gar. I have to move my desk.
Oh, who's talking, Dainty Dick?
You know that boy from the dairy, Marge? The one with the cabanica boots? Yes, with those spots of them.
No. What did you say?
I told him to run off home.
No, you never.
I said I don't go no pictures of bat wallopers. Should have seen his face.
What can I do for an ice cream slice?
Charlie Rebels had his ear syringe.
Rebel!
Shortly after we had moved into the house, in the last year of the First World War, a man appeared on the doorstep asking for a cup of tea. Our mother had brought him in and given him a whole breakfast. There had been blood on his face, and he had seemed very weak. Now he was in the kitchen with a woman and a lot of children, and his eyes shone brightly, and his whiskers smiled. He talked something of battles, and of flying in the air. He spoke of sleeping in the woods, which seemed a good idea. And he was a soldier, because Mother had said so.
It must have been cruel in the woods.
I've got some sacks, Mum. They keep out the wet.
They wouldn't. They'd suck it up like a wick and wrap him in it.
You oughtn't to live like that. You ought to get back home.
No. No, that wouldn't do. They'd jump on me before you could say knife.
Bang! Look. I'm a soldier.
Oh. Tony.
Oh. It's all right, miss. A soldier, eh? Well, you make a better one than me, son, any day.
My dad's in the army. Oh. And my uncle's. Are they fighting in the wood? Have you seen them?
Lord bless you. It's a big place, son.
And where are you with?
Why, I've never heard so many questions. Can't you see the poor man's trying to eat his porridge?
Will you?
When he stopped coming, we knew he had not. The girl said some policeman had taken him away in a cart, and Mother sighed and was sad over the poor man. I was not at all surprised when I heard of the end of the world. Everything pointed to it. The sky was low and whirling with black clouds. The wood roared night and day, stirring great seas of sound.
They told me the stores never given away prunes.
I was sure it was the end of the world. All my life was the war, and the war was the world. Now the war was over, so the end of the world was come. It made no other sense to me. We went hand in hand through the rain, up the bank and down the street. A bonfire crackled, and a woman jumped up and down in the light of it, red as a devil, a jug in her hand, uttering cries that were not singing. And a man came up and kissed the girls, and hopped in the road and twisted on one toe.
Well,
Then he fell down in the mud and lay there working his legs like a frog and croaking a loud song.
Oh, my darling, oh, my darling,
I wanted to stop. I had never seen a man like this in such a wild good humour. But we hurried on. Then the school chimney caught fire.
Just as cold.
Ours haven't got no bigger.
The village is full of men, scratching their arms and staring at the gardens.
Peter Martin!
Are you going to need paying today, Mrs. Lee?
Now, where's my purse?
Oh, there it is. Oh, dear. Jack, run up to Mrs. Turk and try to borrow half a crown. I didn't know I'd got so low.
What?
Amma, I stole a bird of bacon. Remember when it's turned?
Jack Lee.
Yes, Ma. Got a nice shade, look.
Yeah. Where'd you find that?
In the bread.
What?
Oh, my goodness.
I shall still want paying, Mrs. Lee.
Here, better have this nail back then.
Came in the last batch.
Will you have some tea while you wait?
Yes, if 'tis going.
Oh dear. Lol, Tony, run and see if Granny Trill's got a screw of tea.
Yes, Ma'am. Rachel, Tony?
Yes.
Our house was 17th century Cotswold. It was shaped like a T, and we lived in the downstroke. The top stroke was divided separately among two old ladies, one portion lying above the other. Granny Trill and Granny Wallen were two rival ancients, and they lived on each other's nerves. They referred to each other as
"Oh, down under,"
and
"Oh, up top."
In all their time as close neighbours, they never exchanged a word.
You home, Granny Trill? You in there, Gran?
Well, I'll be bothered at you varmints again.
Come to visit, Gran.
Well, you better come in. But mind my things or I'll cut you to pieces. Come on, fill the belt.
Look at this one, Tony. Shaped like a lead. What are you doing, Gran?
Just biding still. Just biding and combing me bits.
You going bald, Gran?
I still got me bits.
It's coming out.
No, it ain't.
Look at that dead stuff dropping out of your coat.
Well, that's healthy. Makes room for more.
Tony! He just put cotton reel in your teapot.
I found a knife
in his breath.
Oh, serves him right for eating it.
A lot of dead stuff dropping out your comb, Gran.
I got more than her down under. Her as bald as a cater moot. Wicked old lump. I'll see her gone. Oh, hi, you, Glory Lee, you get your hands from me drawers. Them female things.
Come for a twist of tea.
Then ask for it.
Where is it? I'll get it.
In the bag. Here, pass me the almanac off the wall, Tony. Let's see what he's got to say. That's it. There we go. Ah. A party of scientists will slip down a crevice with certain resultant fatalities. Oh, that's for June. If they must poke around them places. The murdered cadaver will be shockingly uncovered in a Western industrial town. I knew that had come. Crisis in Parliament. House struck by fireball. Riots. A royal surprise. Oh, I know what that is. Turkish massacre. Famine. War. The king will suffer a slight infirmity. Well, he foresees the monstrous doings. Terrible year, it looks to be. Oh, he says we'll have hail on Tuesday.
You're 100 yet, Gran.
No, I am.
Have you got a dad?
No.
I haven't either. Not here.
Oh, mine died. He was killed by a tree over Ashcombe. He was a woodcutter, you know. Strong as a giant. He could lift a horse and wagon. We lived in a wigwam made of pine branches, just me and Dad, deep in a wood. When he was out tree felling, I made baskets and sold them. We lived there 10 years. I grew up into a beautiful girl. Somehow I seemed to send men breathless. But when the timbermen came, my dad hid me under sacks so they couldn't see me.
What about the tree, Gran?
Yes, one day a tree fell on me, Dad. I was 15. I heard him shout up the thicket. Well, I ran up and found him skewered to the ground by a branch. He was lying face downwards and couldn't see me. I'm going, Alice, he said. So I clawed all in the ground and lay beside him till he died. Took 24 hours. He never spoke again.
Dad, come out! Tell me!
What happened then? I lay with him long after that. Then some carters came and found us. I stood and watched him roll the tree off him and straighten his limbs, and then I runned up the scrub and hid. I hid for a week near some foxholes up there. I neither ate nor drank.
Mom, where's that tea?
Then what? Well, Squire sent some men to look for me. They found me, but I fought like a savage. They carried me down the manor and gave me a bath. First bath I'd ever had. Took 6 of them to get me soaped. Then they married me to George Pill, the gardener. He was a good man. Much like me, Dad, but a good deal slower. Yeah. My dad planted that tree. He thrust the seed in with his finger.
Try this one then, Mrs. Lee. 'Tis the first of my last year's cowslip.
Oh, lovely, Granny Wallen. Clear as a bell, look. Boys, where have you been?
Tima? He thrust the seed in with his finger.
Oh, that's nice, dear. Pour the baker a glass of wine, Harold. Save me making tea. I don't know where Jack's got to with that money. Will you stay for some, Granny?
What's that here, Carl?
Where be that mouse to? I'll take him back, going to get a rebate on that loaf.
I've given it to Granny Trim.
Good boy.
Mr. Davis is dead.
Dead? Oh, dear, when?
This afternoon. That's another one gone. Good. Her up top will follow soon after. I was sitting home last night just counting all that's been took. From Farmer Lusty's up to the memorial. I reckon there were nigh on 200.
Oh, no.
There's been waves of throat cutting.
Oh, too much misery in the world.
There was Widow Thomas cut in half by a bull.
Mm. I heard about that.
Two children eaten by a sow.
Oh.
The bacon taste is very sweet, so I'm told.
Sweet, yes.
Oh,
my goodness, this wine.
Sweet. There's all sorts goes in my wine.
Lord bless you, Granny. Fancy cowsnips and parsley. You must give me the recipe, my dear.
Ready, Ma?
Ah, Jack, at last, there you are. Now, there's the bread money, my dear.
See you all tomorrow.
Bye. Bye.
Now then, boys, Lol and Tony, time for violin practice. Back to your own work, Jack.
Oh, do we have to?
Granny Trill was the first to die. They carried her coffin along the edge of the wood and drew it on a cart through the village. Granny Wallen followed some distance behind. All went well till the lowering of the coffin.
Earth to earth, ashes to ashes.
That's a lie. That baggage were younger than me. 95, she says. More than 90, and I've gone 92. Oh, it's a crime you letting her go to her maker. Got up with such brazen lies. Oh, dig up the old devil. Get her brass plate off. Not in the living church.
Granny Wallen had triumphed. She had buried her rival, and now there was no more to do. About 2 weeks later, she gave up in her sleep. She was found on her bed, dressed in bonnet and shawl, and her signalling broom in her hand. Her open eyes were fixed on the ceiling in a listening stare of death. A few mornings later, we were sitting in the kitchen, waiting for Fred Bates to deliver the milk.
Where were you then, Fred Bates?
Never been this rich before.
Find out where you are.
God damn it, God damn it.
What's up then, Fred?
What? Ain't nobody told you?
What? You better come indoors, Fred. Have a cup of tea.
The girls dragged him indoors and poured him tea and forced him to sit down.
Who'd have thought it?
Thought what?
Leave him be.
Come on, Fred.
He ain't going nowhere.
No, he ain't. He's told us.
I was coming from the milking.
Yeah?
Early. First light. I was passing Squire Jones' pond.
Mm-hmm.
I'd stopped for a minute to chuck a stone at a rat. I saw something floating.
A body.
Oh, shut up.
It was white and spread out in the water. First I thought it was a dead swan or something. Or a goat.
Jones's goat!
Shut up, Jack.
Who was it?
Shut up, Doc.
I went down closer.
Yeah?
Down by the lily weeds.
Uh-huh.
She was staring up at me.
Oh,
her hair was loose.
I know who it was.
Miss Flynn.
Miss Flynn! Oh, my God.
Miss Flynn, the Ashcombe suicide. A solitary, offbeat beauty whose mute, distressed, life-abandoned image remains with me till this day. She was tall, consumptive, and pale as thistledown. A flock-haired pre-Raphaelite stunner. Mother was evasive when we asked questions about her.
There are others more wicked, poor soul.
On walks, we often passed her way and always looked out for her.
Ma, can we have some
beer?
Oh, maybe. Yay!
Yoo-hoo! Miss Flynn! How are you keeping, my dear?
Miss Flynn came out with a skip to the gate. She stared down at her hands and then at us.
Such cheeky boys. The image of Morgan they are. I've been bad, Mrs. Oh. It's the west wind, my dear. Bad for the nerves.
I've been bad, Mrs. And the things I must do. It's my mother again, you know. I can't keep her sick spirit from me. She don't let me alone at nights.
Oh, I know, Miss Flynn. Well, we better be going, my dear. Bye-bye.
We hurried off down the lane.
Poor, poor soul. And her half gently, too.
What's the matter with her?
Oh, nothing at all. Now, you come along, boy.
Oh. Oh. And she won't wear a stitch of clothes. Her eyes was wide open and she was staring up through the water like someone gazing through a window.
No.
I got such a shock, I dropped one of me buckets and the milk runned in the pond. I stood there thinking, that's Miss Flynn. There's no one around.
She drowned herself.
Drowned.
Then what, Fred? What happened?
Well, I run back to the farm and told them, and they came and fished her out with the hay rake.
Oh.
I didn't wait to see no more. I had me milk to deliver.
Have you heard?
No, what? About poor Miss Flynn, been and drowned herself down in the pond.
We just can't mean it. Yes, Fred Bates found her.
Fred Bates enjoyed a day of welcome wherever he went.
Can't believe it. Only saw her last week.
I know.
He repeated his story over and over again and drank cups of tea by the dozen.
And she won't wear a stitch of clothes.
But his fame turned bad very suddenly the next day.
Hear about Fred?
What?
He saw a man crushed to death by a wagon.
Where?
On the road to Stroud.
Twice in 2 days.
He'll see the devil next.
Fred Bates was avoided after that. We crossed roads when we saw him coming. No one would speak to him or look him in the eye. And he wasn't allowed to deliver milk anymore. As a child, I used to boast the rare distinction of having been christened twice. The second time, which took place in church, was a somewhat rowdy affair. I was 3 years old, and I cheeked the parson and made free with the holy water. But my first anointing was much more solemn, and occurred immediately after my birth. I had entered the world in doubt and silence, a frail, lifeless lump. The midwife took one look at my worn-out face and said I wouldn't last the day. But my mother was determined that I should enter heaven. She remembered those tiny, anonymous graves tucked away under the churchyard laurels, where quick dying infants were stowed secretly among the jam jars behind the vicar's back.
The bones of my son will rest in God's own ground and not rot with those pitiful heathens.
So she summoned the curate, who came and called out my Adam, baptized me from a teacup, admitted me to the church, and gave me 3 names to die with.
I baptize thee with the sign of the cross, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost. Amen.
This florid christening proved unnecessary. Secretly, silently, aided by unknown forces, I hung on. I was prone to successive invasions, enough to mop up an orphanage. I had diphtheria, whooping cough, pleurisy, double pneumonia, and congestion of the bleeding lungs. My most perilous moment came when I was 18 months old, at the hands of Mrs. Moore, a neighbour. My mother was in bed for the birth of my brother Tony. We were all born at home those days. Mrs. Moore had been called in to help.
How are you feeling, Ma? A
bit tired, Doss, but all right otherwise. Say hello to your new brother. This is your sister, Tony. Dorothy.
Hello? Oh, you're too sweet.
While still in the care of Mrs. Moore, I entered a second bout of pneumonia. What followed, I was told much later.
How are you all getting on?
All right.
Aiding yourselves?
Yes, Ma.
What are you all up to down there?
Nothing much.
Where's Marjorie then?
Yard.
And Phyllis?
She's peeling spuds.
What about the others?
I was cleaning his bike and Jack's sitting on the steps.
And Laurie, how's our Lol?
Oh, Laurie, he's dead.
What?
He turned yellow. Mrs. Moore's laying him out.
She groped her way downstairs and staggered towards the kitchen. And lo, there I was, stretched naked on the table, yellow, just as Dorothy said. Mrs. Moore, humming gaily, was sponging my body as though preparing a chicken for dinner.
What do you think you're doing?
Poor boy. He's gone, Mrs. Lee. Blessed are the angels. Thought I'd rush him for the box. I just didn't want to bother you.
You cruel, wicked woman. Our Laurie ain't dead. Just look at his healthy colour. Get out of my way. Oh, my poor baby. You bad, evil woman.
Somehow, I lived, though it was a very near thing. So easy to have succumbed to Mrs. Moore's cold sponge. Only Dorothy's boredom saved me. Soon after this, my sister Frances died. Though only four, she used to watch me like a nurse, sitting all day beside my cot and talking softly in a special language. Nobody noticed that she was dying herself. They were too much concerned with me. She died suddenly, silently, without complaint, in a chair in the corner of the room. An ignorant death which need never have happened. And I believe she gave me her life. But at least she was mourned. Not a day passed afterwards but that Mother shed some tears for her. When my mother was 17, she left home and went into domestic service. As a scullery maid, nursemaid, parlour maid, housemaid, and large manners all over the West. She saw luxuries and refinements she could never forget, and to which she naturally belonged. Sometimes faced by a scratch meal in the kitchen, Mother would transform it in a trance of memory.
For dining, they would have every place set just so. Personal cruet for every guest. The silver must be arranged in order. A set for each separate dish.
No stopping here now.
First of all, the butler would bring in the soup and begin serving the ladies. There'd be river trout next, or fresh salmon lightly sprinkled with herbs and sauces. Then woodcock, perhaps, or a guinea fowl. Oh, yes, and a joint as well. And a cold ham on the sideboard. For the gentlemen only, of course. The ladies never did more than pick at their food.
Why not?
Night, Ma. Oh, it wasn't thought proper. Good night, dear. Then cook would send in some violet cakes, and there'd be walnuts and fruit and brandy.
Night.
For Miss Emily's betrothal.
Careful up those stairs, Jack, and mind that candle.
A man came from Paris to do her hair. And her dress had 1,000 pearls.
Our mother was a buffoon, extravagant and romantic, and was never wholly taken seriously. Yet within her she nourished a brightness of spirit which, though continuously bludgeoned by the cruelties of her luck, remained uncrushed and unembittered to the end. Wherever she got it from, God knows. But she loved this world and saw it with fresh hopes that never clouded. She was an artist, a life-giver, an original, and she never for a moment knew it.
Think of a number.
Lemon onion and two.
Double it.
2,400 and... What?
Can't do it. Gonna count to a million. Go on then.
One, two, three, four, five, six.
My first encounter with Uncle Ray, prospector, dynamiter, buffalo hunter, and builder of transcontinental railways, was an occasion of memorable suddenness. One moment he was a legend at the other end of the world, the next he was in my bed.
It's your Uncle Ray, come on. Get up now and let him sleep.
A huge, scaly man with thick legs and knotted arms.
Barbs on his chin. He's got skin like a crocodile.
Uncle Ray was more full of stories than anyone I'd ever met.
You really built all those railways, Uncle Ray?
All them, and some besides.
And were there Indians?
Indians or Eskimos, depending on where you was at the time.
I never seen an Indian.
Wildest thing on two legs. They never sleep. They can track a man for years and eat only once a month. And then only what they can find.
What do they eat, Uncle?
Oh, cactus mostly. And little boys when they can lay their hands on one.
No.
True as I'm standing here. Boil them up with frogs. Had it myself once. Found it kind of stringy. Well, gotta be going.
Where you gotta go?
I wanna see a man about a mule.
You ain't. Where you going? What for?
Get my fingers pressed, tongue starched, back oiled.
It ain't true. You're fibbing.
See you all in the oven. Scrub your elbows and mind for Injuns. Oh, give me a home. Where the buffalo roams, where the deer and then hello.
We never knew where my uncle went to. We couldn't think of any place to go to. Then he'd come back much later, perhaps the following night, wet through with a dog-like grin.
Ma, I found him in the garden.
Raylight, you best get to bed.
I can't move an inch. I got a bone in my leg. Maybe two.
What a state you are in.
Give me a hole.
You should have heard what he said to me.
What was it then?
I'm not saying, but it made me blush.
When he got through his money, he went back to the railway camps. Soon after, while working in the snow-capped Rockies... he blew himself up with dynamite. He fell 90 feet down the Kicking Horse Pass and into a frozen lake. A Tamworth schoolteacher, now my Auntie Elsie, travelled 4,000 miles to repair him. Having plucked him from the ice and thawed him out, she married him and brought him home. The morning came, without any warning, when my sisters surrounded me, wrapped me in scarves, tied up my bootlaces, thrust a cap on my head, and stuffed a baked potato in my pocket.
What's this?
You're starting school today.
I ain't! I'm stopping home!
Now, Lol, you're a big boy now.
I ain't!
You are!
The village school was a small stone barn divided by a wooden partition into two rooms, the infants and the big ones.
Boys who don't go to school get put into boxes and turned into rabbits and get chopped up on Sundays.
Every child in the valley crowded there, remained till he was 14 years old, then was presented to the working field or factory with nothing in his head more burdensome than a few mnemonics, a jumbled list of wars, and a dreamy image of the world's geography.
Now, come on, Lol. We don't want you being late on your first day. Our Jack will have arrived hours ago.
Jack says they beat you with a brush if you're bad in school, and stand you in the corner, put a hat on your head so he has a laugh.
You don't want to go listening to Jack. Just because he's older, he thinks he can say what he likes, and you'll believe every word.
It ain't true, then.
Of course it ain't.
Ma, what's happened to them trees?
Nothing's happened.
Yes, it has. They've fallen to bits.
It's only the leaves dropping. We're in autumn now. The leaves always drop in autumn. Now come along and stop dawdling. We're going to get there sooner or later. You're just putting it off.
But come on.
Good morning, children. Good morning, teacher. You're Laurie Lee, aren't you? Come to join us?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am?
Yes.
Ma'am?
What?
Never mind. Sit there for the present. Our Father. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Miss B, the head teacher, was about as physically soothing as a rake. She was a hunched and punitive little body, and the school had christened her Crabby. She had a sour yellow look, lank hair coiled like earphones, and the skin and voice of a turkey.
Shuffling your feet, walk, Harry, playing with the desk, a smirking at the miserable Rosie. I will not have it. I will not, I say. I repeat, I will not have it. Lee?
Yes, miss?
Jack Lee, the bright one, not you, fat and lazy. Inches in a foot.
Promise.
Everybody?
12 inches, 1 foot. 3 feet, make up. 40 pounds, make stone. 8 stone, 100 weight. Twice, 2 or 4. 1 God is love. 1 Lord is king. 1 King is truth. 1 George is faith.
Good. Right. A poem. Which must stand on one or more of the books. A king. Yes. My voice. An old teacher. Charity. Sheila.
What's that, miss?
Don't interrupt, Frank Hopkins. A sea wreck is when a ship sinks and the people drown. More often than not, in a storm.
Please, miss, I've got to stay home tomorrow. Go out with the ends.
Oh, you may stay at home, Maud Carey, with my blessing. It is fitting that an individual with the wit of a hen should be tending them. Enough. You have your work set? I suggest you get on with it.
Our village school was poor and crowded, but in the end, I relished it. It had a lively reek of steaming life. Boys' boots, girls' hair, stoves and sweat, blue ink, white chalk and shavings. We learnt nothing abstract or tenuous there, just simple patterns of facts and letters, portable tricks of calculation, no more than was needed to measure a shed, write out a bill, or read a swine disease warning.
Ma?
What is it, Hopkins?
I don't know how to spell shears, ma. Like what you does to a sheep. Cheers.
How do you think you spell it, Hopkins?
Dunno, ma'am.
But how do you spell ears?
E-E-R-S, ma'am.
As you find it your duty, Rosie Burdock, perhaps you would care to inform the class.
E-A-R-S, ma'am.
Precisely so. Well, Hopkins?
Well, what, miss?
How do you suppose one spells cheered, now secure in the knowledge that ears boasts an A? Write it 50 times, boy. Cheers. S-H-E-A-R-S. Cheers.
Spadge Hopkins was one of those heavy, full-grown boys, thick-legged, red-fisted, bursting with flesh, designed for the great outdoors. He was nearly 14 and physically out of scale, at least as far as our school was concerned.
She'd better look out, her.
The sight of him squeezed into his desk was worse than a bullock in ballet shoes, and he wasn't much of a scholar.
E-A-R, shears. That crabby, she'd better, that's all. S-H-E-A-R, shears. How does he spell ears, Spadge Hopkins? S-H-E-A-R-S, shears. So how does he spell... Ah, sod it!
Did you say something, Hopkins?
No.
Reading over your poem, perhaps?
Yeah, that was it.
In that case, perhaps you'd like to share your work with the rest of the class. Stand up, Spadge Hopkins. Read us out your poem.
The kitten. A furry ball is my kitten, curled up by the kitchen fire, ready to spring or sleep. It liked the things I like to eat. It isn't like a sheep. A sheep you shear once a year and use a wool for mittens. No, not a prowling hunting cat, but a born seedy rat you get if you try to shear a cat.
Silence! Spadge Hopkins, what were you asked to write about?
Kittens!
And what, in fact, was the subject of your poem?
Dunno.
Sheep! A sheep you shear once a year and use the wool for mittens. This Spadge Hopkins is a poem about sheep, not kittens. But sheep, you understand.
I've had enough of this.
What do you think you're going, young man?
Out with the same business as yours.
Sit down this instant, I won't have it.
Bye bye.
Cabby.
Oh, get off.
Get back in.
Cabby.
Well, don't off. Just sit there. Help me, somebody.
Cheers.
Get back in your seat. Oh, put me down.
Oh, cheers.
Ah. Oh, get me down. Somebody get me down.
Well, love, that was your first day at school. Like it?
He didn't like it, Ma. He's in a rage.
What's the matter, love?
They never give me a present.
Present? What present?
They said they'd give me a present.
Well, now, I'm sure they didn't.
They did. They said, you're Laurie Lee, ain't you? Well, you just sit there for the present. I sat there all day and I never got it. I ain't going back there again.
In episode 1 of Laurie Lee's Cider with Rosie, the older Laurie was played by Tim McInerney, Mother by Niamh Cusack, and Young Lol by Sunny Leeworthy. Phyllis was played by Jennifer Compton, Harold by Paul Currier, Marge by Lisa Kay, Doth by Bryony Ford, Jack by Daniel Clifford, and Tony by Jed Blacklock. Krabby was played by June Barry, Granny Trill by Constance Chapman, and Granny Wallen by Val Lorraine. Fred Bates was played by Chris Grimes, Uncle Ray and the Deserter by David Goodland, and Miss Flynn by Laura Strahan. Spadge Hopkins was played by James Lawton, and Lowell's school friends by the pupils of Rodborough Primary School and Archway School in Stroud. The music was arranged and played by Paul Burgess. Laurie Lee's Sided with Rosie was dramatised by Nick Dark and directed on location in Gloucestershire by Jeremy Howe and Viv Beebe for BBC Bristol.